Google Play.
Hi, this is Craig Kopp, General Manager of WMNF. It's been the kind of year where, looking back, your first thought just might be, well, at least we're still here. But that's not the case at WMNF. Sure, it's been a crazy year, but it's been a unifying year, too. And WMNF has been there, providing news and public affairs programming where we can all talk it out, and music programming for that break from the world we need now more than ever. Your support keeps WMNF on the air. And as we wrap up 2017, you can let us know that you want WMNF to be ready for 2018 and whatever it brings by making a tax-deductible contribution in our end-of-year campaign. Just go online to WMNF.org. Be sure to make your contribution by midnight, New Year's Eve. And thanks.
Good afternoon and welcome to the first midpoint for 2018. It's Thursday, January 4th, and I'm your host, Mitch Perry, reporter with Florida Politics. Your host in each and every Thursday at this time, although I haven't been here the last few weeks. I've been off enjoying the Christmas holidays out in the San Francisco Bay Area, so it's great to be back here. Well, coming up next Tuesday is the beginning of the 60-day Florida legislative session, which starts early this year. And joining us in the program to talk about the issues of the day going into the session, as well as what's going on with the Constitutional Revision Commission, will be St. Petersburg, Tampa Democratic State Senator Daryl Roussan. That will be in a few minutes. But as I just said, I was in California last week where, you may have heard, pot, cannabis, weed became legal for everyone on January 1st. This certainly bodes well for the marijuana movement. But there was a big setback earlier today. The Associated Press reporting that Attorney General Jeff Sessions is rescinding the Obama-era policy that has paved the way for legalized marijuana to flourish in states around the country. Sessions will instead let federal prosecutors where pot is legal decide how aggressively to enforce federal marijuana law. And talking about that with us is Morgan Fox with the Marijuana Policy Project. Morgan, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here with us. So, in a nutshell, I think I know a little bit where this is coming from because I was out in California when California first had medical marijuana back in 1996, and there was times charges, you know, even then with the U.S. attorneys in certain parts of California going after some of these pot growers, even though the state had legalized it. Of course, it's always still the case where it's against federal law. So, tell us a little more about the Obama Eric Holder ruling from 2013 and what this new Sessions announcement means about that.
In 2013, a guideline was issued to U.S. attorneys through the Department of Justice, directing them not to interfere with actors in states that had made medical or adult use marijuana legal, provided that they were in compliance with state law and were meeting certain criteria based on public safety. And, since then, we've seen that the legal marijuana market become something very sophisticated and regulated in a way that works and keeps money out of the hands of criminals and actually improves public safety. This statement from the Attorney General is really out of touch with both the rest of the Department of Justice, the President, and the American people.
Yeah, I'm wondering where the president isn't on this, but it's certainly, I guess, not a surprise. Jeff Sessions he's assailed marijuana in the past as being comparable to heroin and has blamed it for spikes in violence. You guys at the Marijuana Policy Project, were you expecting Sessions, I mean, maybe not this particular announcement, but were you expecting something for him on the issue of marijuana this year or, you know, during the administration's time?
We had hoped that he would heed the advice of his own task force, which last year urged him to keep the Cole memo and these protections in place. I don't think that there was any sort of expectation that this would be rescinded so early in the year. But when you're looking at the fact that both the president has said that this should be a states' rights issue and that the majority of Americans think that marijuana should be legal for adults, it really doesn't make much sense for the attorney general to be suddenly withdrawing this policy. Traditionally, U.S. attorneys have always had a lot of leeway, but under this guideline, they were directed not to waste resources going after people that were in compliance. And this sort of a statement and rescinding of that memo is really just a directive of them to start allocating those resources back towards that wasteful procedure.
Now, Morgan Fox, with California becoming legal this past week, how many states in the U.S. right now have legal recreational marijuana?
Well, there are 8 states, as well as the District of Columbia, that where marijuana is legal for adults to possess. And all of those states, with the exception of D.C., have laws that call for the regulating of marijuana, very similarly to alcohol. California just became the latest one to actually institute those programs. And we expect Massachusetts and Maine to be following suit pretty shortly.
Now, I know this announcement just came this afternoon, or this morning, actually, so you have had little time to really dig deeper into this. I'm wondering, because now with the discretion allowed for U.S. attorneys to make their own calls, as it were, here, I'm thinking about these states that do have legal pot, if there's more of a tendency in maybe some of these regions versus others where law enforcement will be aggressive here. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, it's really difficult to tell what the individual U.S. attorney's actions are going to be, but I certainly hope that they listen to what state lawmakers and regulatory leaders in the places where marijuana is legal have been saying to them for years now, and that is that regulation works. It is much smarter to have this market be controlled by state-level regulators and legitimate tax-paying businesses that are creating jobs as opposed to drug dealers and violent cartels.
Let's talk about the states that have gone legal. And I think the most, the one that's got the most notoriety in the last few years has been Colorado. And what I understand and is in terms of the economy, this has been a very productive thing for the state of Colorado. Do you have any statistics bearing that out?
Well, they're looking at $1 billion in sales every year in Colorado, roughly, and that's $1 billion that isn't going to drug dealers anymore, not to mention the tens of thousands of jobs that have been created in the legal marijuana industry there.
What's the latest with the fact that the banks, I know, have historically not wanted to work with these organizations because of the fact that it's still against federal law? Is there any breakthrough on that issue?
Well, I think that it was recently shown that more banks are being willing to work with these businesses, but there is still that federal legal hurdle. But I think that a lot of these states have been kind of getting around that because there is a need for this, and organizations like credit unions and state-level banks that aren't necessarily federally insured have been stepping in to fill the gap.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Morgan Fox. He's with the Marijuana Policy Project out of Washington, D.C. Morgan, so with, here in Florida, of course, we passed medical marijuana a year ago. It's finally getting implemented right now with dispensaries around the state and more to be added. I believe now it's, is it 29 states in all that have, whether it's recreational or medical marijuana at this point in the United States?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, and again, you mentioned Maine and Massachusetts going legal later this year. So it does seem, regardless of what happened today on the federal level, and that's certainly a major issue we're going to see going forward, but the momentum does seem to be for the rest of the United States to be going to, everybody having access to marijuana of some sort or another.
Absolutely. I think that, it's been proven that marijuana prohibition is a failed policy that causes far more harm than marijuana actually does itself. And what we're seeing here is the federal government interfering in what they think is a beneficial way, but it's actually going to cause far more harm. The federal government cannot interfere with states deciding not to punish people for possessing or growing marijuana. All they can really do, and they don't have the resources to be going house to house, or have actual law enforcement on the street at the at the federal level to arrest marijuana consumers, but by making it difficult for states to actually regulate the marijuana market, they're just ensuring that it continues to be controlled by criminals.
All right, Morgan Fox is with the Marijuana Policy Project out of Washington, D.C. Morgan, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. That's Morgan Fox with the Marijuana Policy Project. And we'll continue to follow this development here regarding Jeff Sessions' reversal here, letting U.S. attorneys around the country decide what kind of federal resources to devote to marijuana enforcement based on what they see as priorities in their districts. And as I mentioned, this happened in California when it first, I think California was the first state to go with medical marijuana back 20 years ago, 1996. And if I recall accurately, actually, you know, during the Clinton administration, there were certain U.S. attorneys, especially in the Mendocino County area, that were quite aggressive in going after pot farmers at the time. And a lot of people were surprised. They thought with the Democratic administration that wouldn't be the case. But that happened back then. Now, again, giving discretion to these U.S. attorneys, Morgan Fox said it's really too early to tell. I mean, what U.S. attorneys are going to be, the ones who are going to be more aggressive than others about this, although certainly I'm sure in the next following days we're going to hear more from those U.S. attorneys to hear what their priorities are. Okay, let's change subjects here. Although, actually, I want to stay with marijuana in a minute, but let's bring on the phone now State Senator Daryl Rahsaan. Senator Rahsaan, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Hey, good afternoon, Senator. Daryl Rahsaan is the state senator for District 19, which is part of Pinellas County in South St. Petersburg and also part of Hillsborough County. Now, do you have, is that it, Daryl, or do you have other parts like you did before with your House seat?
Well, of the seven senators in the Tampa Bay area, which includes future Senate President Bill Galvano and future Senate President Wilton Simpson, of the seven, I'm the only one that has both Hillsborough and Pinellas. 58% of my district includes Apollo Beach, Riverview, Brandon, all of Ybor City, then the neighborhoods in Tampa south of Fowler Avenue. Then it jumps across the bay and picks up at 22nd Avenue North in St. Pete, all of downtown to the Skyway Bridge and all of Gulfport. It's quite a diverse district. It's a challenging district. I think that's why they made me vice chair on the Transportation Committee in the Florida Senate, because I'm the only one that has to fight the Skyway Bridge, the Gandy, the Howard Franklin, just to get to areas of my district.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you get a per diem for gas for that. But now, I saw the story in Politico Florida this morning, so let's talk about that. This relates to marijuana. The story headlined, "Legislators Unaware Black Farmers Group Limited Membership Required for Medical Marijuana License." And this talks about how yourself and Miami Senator, or Miami Garden Senator Oscar Brannon, were said they didn't know that the Florida Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association had closed its doors to new members last year when it lobbied fellow legislators to require membership in the group to land one of the 10 coveted licenses to grow medical marijuana in Florida. Tell us more about this, Senator Rahsaan.
Well, I filed an amendment that would open the process back up. You know, it was a shame in the first place. Well, we created as a legislature two preferential licenses for citrus growers, yet we created one license for African-American farmers who have proved a history of discrimination from the Department of Agriculture, not Adam Putnam's department, but the U.S. Department of Agriculture, in getting loans and in maintaining their farming practices. We created one license and then told the black farmers in the Pigford class and a certain membership in an association that they had to fight amongst themselves to utilize that one license. What we didn't know was that the association cut off new membership and failed to renew old memberships as a way of limiting, even within an already limited and restricted market, the opportunity for African Americans to participate in this green rush. And my amendment seeks to open that door back up.
Okay, so let's talk about, there's a lot to talk about, of course, the session beginning next week, but of course you are a member, one of three Democrats, I believe only three Democrats, of a 37-member Constitutional Revision Commission, which has gotten a lot of hype over the last year as you have met throughout the state, the once every 20 years a time when this commission comes together to perhaps, you know, change the Constitution. Basically, the only way this happens these days, of course, is if citizens drive their own initiatives on the ballot, or, of course, legislators can also propose that as well. This commission's been meeting for, I guess, close to a year right now. So where are we at with the process right now, Senator Rahsaan, with the CRC?
Well, we've heard from the public. There have been a round of public hearings, a second round to come, I think, in late March before the May deadline that we have to have amendment proposals, that is, passed and then prepared to be placed on the ballot. Right now, the committees are meeting. Proposals are being heard, passed, some are dying, and we'll get to this process, through this process, hopefully before the end of session, so that when May rolls around, we'll meet our deadline. Things are going slow. There are only four sitting legislators that are on the Constitutional Revision Commission: Chris Browse, Jeanette Nunez, Tom Lee, and myself. And we're going to be pulling double duty as session begins. CRC is going to meet on Thursday afternoon and Fridays when we're not in session. And that means that we'll basically, the four of us, will be basically living in Tallahassee for the entirety of session. But that's okay. We're there to fight for the people. We're there to do something substantive, and hopefully something meaningful will come out of the CRC. If nothing else, then I hope that we do no harm. As some have said, the Constitution is packed with some things that don't need to be in there. Maybe we can clean it up.
Yeah, okay, so right now I know there are 103 proposed constitutional revisions that are listed right now. It's kind of confusing. I was on the website yesterday and I talked to a spokesperson for the CRC to try to understand all what's going on here. We know there are proposals by the individual commissioners like yourself, and then the public has had this chance, although that deadline has ended right now. What I know, one that you have been pushing, right, and this is, of course, there's a statewide push to do this as well, which is to restore the voting rights to ex-felons. I just talked to your guy, Barry Edwards, earlier today, which is a really important development. He says there's still the movement to try to get that on the ballot. There's still lacking 100,000 signatures. I believe you need to get close to 700,000 to get on the ballot by February 1st. So the only avenue may be through the CRC. What do you think of the possibilities of that becoming an amendment through the CRC regarding the restoration of ex-felons' voting rights?
Look, this is the Sunshine State. Even though we're experiencing a little uncharacteristic cold and snow and rain, and it's still the Sunshine State, and therefore, I have to be optimistic. I got a plan for the sun to come up. And it is horrific. It is an atrocity. It is a tragedy that we are one of the few states that punishes 1.4 million people who are disenfranchised after they've done their time, paid their debt back to society, and they're not able to vote, hold certain jobs, or run for a political office, to be real participants in community again. And I think we need to change that. The possibility of doing it exists. The climate is right, both in criminal justice reform in the legislature, and I'm hoping in the CRC. I think my proposal is the most pragmatic of any of them. There's a push back against violent offenders like murderers, those convicted of manslaughter, kidnapping, robbery, aggravated battery, those types of offenses, of getting their rights back right away. But certainly I think people can agree that if it's a drug possession or a theft charge or something that's a non-violent offense, when you've paid your debt, done your time, then you ought to be able to vote again. You ought to be able to be a full participant in community again. And so I'm hopeful. I must remain optimistic that this is the time, these are the people, and the time is right.
Again, if you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to Midpoint here on WMNF. I'm Mitch Perry speaking with State Senator Daryl Roussan, who represents parts of St. Petersburg and Hillsborough County. And by the way, you can reach us here at 813-239-9663. If you want to send us an email, it's dj@wmnf.org. Well, you mentioned criminal justice reform, Senator, and let's talk about that as the session goes in. Talk to a lot of folks, Democrats and Republicans, about the possibility, which I heard a year ago, that is, well, we're going to get some serious criminal justice reform here in Florida. As I think I've mentioned on this program before and certainly written about a lot, Florida is not only an outlier when it comes to passing certain criminal justice reform measures, but behind many conservative states such as Oklahoma, Georgia, Louisiana, Texas. You have several, I was looking at your website in terms of the bills that you were proposing in the legislature this coming session. Of those that you propose regarding criminal justice, which are the ones that you have confidence that you might see get passed this year?
Well, two of them. One of them is the driver's license suspension reform, and the other is conditional release. This will be my third year trying to reform the fact that we have over 700 state prisoners in for driving while license suspended. There ought to be rational relationship to when your license is suspended and the commission of a crime. In other words, I think that worthless check, truancy, graffiti, those types of things shouldn't get your license suspended. Mere simple possession of a misdemeanor amount of marijuana shouldn't get your license suspended. And if you get a suspension, there ought to be some type of pathway to reinstatement other than the exorbitant fees, fines, or incarceration that currently the law calls for. So we want to reform that. We certainly want to punish bad drivers, but we don't want to take away a person's ability to get to work, to engage in community by taking away their driver's license. So this will be the third year we're trying this. I'm hopeful this year. I was just with Speaker Designee Representative Chris Sprouse this morning, who chairs Judiciary in the House.
Right.
I was with him and Jeff Brandis, Senator Brandis, who chairs Justice Appropriations in the House. Although they are conservative in their approach to things, they do recognize that there's need for criminal justice reform. And the conditional release bill that I filed. You know, during the 80s with the crack epidemic and all of the reforms we did with mandatory minimums, we now come full circle. And we realize that merely locking somebody up for 50 years or 30 years on an offense where 20 may have been enough or 15 may have been enough, that we want to look at these sentences and be right on sentencing, smart on justice.
You also have a bill on housing discrimination. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Well, that bill was brought to me by the Human Relations Commission, and it may impact, frankly, our burgeoning Hispanic population. We want to make sure that when people are discriminated against in housing, that they have a correct pathway to justice.
Indeed, indeed. We've got a couple of people on the line here. So, Senator, if you want to hold on a second here, I want to bring some of our listeners here. Let's see here. Let's see. We've got Connie calling in from Tampa. Connie, you're on WMNF.
Hello, and thank you for the program, and happy holidays to both of you. Senator Arusan, I wanted to ask you a question. We're watching now. This marijuana in some states have did a 100% repeal in recreational. I know Florida is talking about medical use. But at the same time, a lot of young African-American males met their criminal hardship by having possession of marijuana. Do you think there should be some type of restorative justice, financial justice, as it relates to some of these dispensaries that's going to sit up in the heart of some of our black community?
Senator Rusan, you hear the question? Oh boy. Okay, let's bring him back there. Sorry, Connie.
Please repeat the question, because I think that has to be a dialogue, that now we are going to have a ton of dispensaries, some going to enter into the black community, and at the same time, when policy was driven for incarceration, a lot of young people won't even be able to find jobs inside this industry.
So specifically, let's repeat, what would you like to see the legislature do regarding having dispensaries, say, if they were in the black community?
I think the community that was most harmed by these policies that we need to ensure that the financial gain do not just go back to the, say, owners of these dispensaries, but they have an open kind of relationship with the community so we can help rebuild.
Okay, we'll make sure to ask that. We're going to get Senator Rasson back. Thanks, Connie, for the phone call. Let's go before we go. Okay, we got Daryl back there. Okay, Senator, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Oh, hey, Kay. I'm sorry about that. I guess we're going to have a problem, so I'm not going to go back and focus on the phone calls there. I don't know if you got to hear the question from Connie Burton there. She's talking about the fact that, you know, we've got a limited number of dispensaries here in Florida right now in the Tampa Bay area right now selling medical marijuana. We may see more in the future. She's wondering if there can be some way that the profits of some of these don't go straight back into the owners who own these dispensaries, but perhaps can be distributed in the black community or other communities have been, you know, deleteriously affected by the war on drugs, if you will. I think I'm trying to accurately paraphrase that question, where in terms of where these profits go from these dispensaries.
Well, first of all, Connie Burton is a great community warrior. She has been on the battlefront, out in the streets, on issues in the forefront before it became popular to be an activist on certain things. And I want to commend her for her continued work on both sides of the bay, Hillsborough and Pinellas. Secondly, she raises a decent point, but pragmatic politics probably would not allow something like what she's proposing to happen. But what I didn't get to hear her, but if I've heard her before correctly, what she's saying is that 7 to 10 times blacks were more arrested, prosecuted, and incarcerated for simple possession of marijuana than their white counterparts.
Right.
That had a devastating effect in the black communities, in the low-income communities, and amongst the poor Hispanic communities. And what she's saying, I some people hate to hear this word, but she's talking about reparations. The fact that a community of people were punished more severely, discriminated against in the arrest, the prosecution of possession of this illegal substance. And now that it's legal, maybe some of the profits should be diverted to bring about education, to bring about effective housing, to bring about good jobs, to bring transportation in these communities affected so that they could get to work. I think that's what she...
Right.
Mean.
I think so as well. Again, I want to tell our listeners, it's 12:33 in the afternoon. You're listening to Midpoint here on WMNF. I'm Mitch Perry with State Senator Daryl Rasson. Senator, I want to ask you about a bill that may get passed this session, and that's about texting while driving and making this a primary, not a secondary offense. Support is certainly growing to make Florida the 46th state in the nation in which texting while driving would be a primary offense, meaning that police could stop and ticket motorists for that reason alone. But I know there's a lot of concern amongst members of the Black Caucus who are unwilling to give police more power, fearing that it could encourage racial profiling. What are your thoughts about this particular bill?
Well, first let me say that I want to commend Florida A&M University, the flagship HBCU in this state, for its position in research, and that I was very proud to sponsor the amendment to Senator Bradley's medical marijuana bill that will allow $10 from every $75 spent on identification cards to go back to this university to study the impact of the unlawful use of marijuana in low-income minority communities and to study the impact of medical use of marijuana in these communities. That will be significant, and that will go, that's part of what Connie was referring to. To your point about texting
yeah.
while driving, it's time, I think, that we look at the data, that we study the statistics that have already been gathered in states where it is a primary offense. The NAACP and minority communities, including myself, had some concerns that driving while black would get you pulled over more quickly with texting or with a cell phone in your hand than others driving. I don't know if that has borne out in other states that have had it. I'm willing to approach it with an open mind. Texting while driving is dangerous. It costs lives. It costs property damage, and we need to have people focus on the safety of being attentive to your driving and not distracted. So I'm willing to approach it with an open mind, whereas before I voted against it when it came to the floor of the House.
Well, with the few minutes we have left with you, Senator Roussan, I want to ask you a couple other questions, one of them being about sexual harassment in Tallahassee. I guess the first question simply is, were you surprised what happened with Senator Jack Wetfala?
Well, first of all, women deserve respect. Senator Latvala is a good human being. I was learning a lot from him, and I respect his tenacity, his knowledge of the process, and his ability to negotiate the legislative process. As you may know, I sat next to him on the floor of the Senate, and I was looking forward to learning a lot more from him about legislation, about appropriation, so that I could be effective in my district. Having said that, I look forward to working with Senator Bradley, who's the new chair of appropriation. I think there needs to be some standards set in terms of what requires resignation, what requires termination as opposed to suspension. We have redemption in so many different areas of our society and in criminal law. Rehabilitation is new, newly being embraced. I was surprised at the swiftness, but by the same token, you must respect the clarion call of women for them to be respected as professionals in the process.
You know, since that time, or actually, I guess even before that, when the revelations about Latvala first were published in Politico in early November, there were a lot of people who thought, with the culture in Tallahassee, there was going to be a lot more people that may be, maybe for lack of a better term, going down. You did have Jeff Clemens, your former colleague there from Lake Worth, who resigned. Rich Workman was named to the Public Service Commission, but he left after Senator Beniquisto came out and said that she had issues with him regarding his sexual appropriateness. Do you think that this is it right now? Or do you think there might be more lawmakers who may be subjected to? We're going to learn about their perhaps inappropriate sexual behavior.
What I think and what I don't know will make a whole nother world.
Okay, right, right.
I'm hopeful that we can get down to the business of state affairs. What I'm hopeful is that we can stop distractions and get to the business of carving out a budget that deals with the environment, that deals with education of our children, that deals with safety in our communities, with criminal justice. What I'm going to work hard for, like I've tried to do in the 8 years I spent in the House in the past year, which has gone lightning fast, that I spent in the Senate, is tackling the relevant, real, daily issues that impact families, not only of Senate District 19, but of all the Senate districts in this state. That's what I'm hopeful for, that we can get past these things and really move towards the business of governing.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Senator Daryl Roussan, State Senator from District 19 in Pinellas and Hillsborough County. Senator, thanks so much for your time this afternoon, and we'll look forward to following you during the legislative session.
Thank you very much.
All right, that is State Senator Daryl Roussan, who I originally thought was going to be in studio. We were going to have him here till 1 p.m., but I think he's in Tallahassee right now, so we're happy to get him on the telephone. But it makes it kind of a little awkward to go back and forth. We lost that call earlier. I want to make sure to give time for the rest of our callers. And so want to hear from you right now in the remaining 20 minutes of the program, 813-239-9663. You can talk about what you've heard earlier today or other issues. By the way, going back to Jeff Sessions, I just saw something here on Twitter. Let me go back to this. It seems like the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives, which is pretty conservative, but I guess they're a states' rights group. They are calling for Jeff Sessions to step down. Let's see here. Let me read to you from, actually, this is an opinion piece in the Washington Examiner. Republican reps Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan said Thursday that Jeff Sessions should step aside now citing the justice. Okay, this is not about the marijuana. This is actually more about his whole dealing with the whole Russia investigation. So, yeah, okay. I sorry about that. I thought it was regarding this announcement regarding marijuana. Yeah, no, actually, it's in fact the person who tweeted this, they made it sound like it was about marijuana, but it says actually it's about not doing enough to protect the most powerful man on the earth. Okay, so want to go back to your phones and, you know, legislative session again coming up. Do you have any hopes? You know, I'm very, not very, but I'm a bit cynical when it comes to not just what Senator Rezaian is talking about in terms of criminal justice reform. I've talked to Ben Diamond about this. Jeff Brandes, to give him his due, was all in last year of the session. And yet he couldn't get his fellow Republicans to go along with some of the proposals, including a task force, which is what other states have done to kind of give a whole holistic review of all what's needed to change in terms of mandatory minimums, in terms of prisons and the conditions in prisons. You know, they're talking about more modest issues here, civil citations, etc. Florida is way behind its conservative brethren, its fellow red states throughout the Southeast, if not throughout the rest of the country, when it comes to making these reforms. And we'll see where that goes. You hear a lot of people talking about, oh, that's, you know, it's kind of a hot topic, it's including amongst conservatives as criminal justice reform. But what does that actually mean when they, do they actually vote for these proposals to happen? Or they just want to talk about that. Rezaian has been pushing for that, of course. I should say I've got a, again, 813-239-9663. Let's see, somebody wanted to go back to this text who writes and does not leave a name. Who is this guy to decide which criminals get their rights back and which don't, or which dump? Selling drugs to school kids is a nonviolent offense. So, but I, okay, and I guess that's going back to the restoring rights for felons, I guess you're saying. I'm not sure there. Let's see here. Kevin writes in, where is the movement to enforce the actual will of the people regarding Amendment 2? No smoking of cannabis is not the will of the people. Right. We have this medical marijuana law in place now, but it does not allow you to smoke cannabis. Now, John Morgan is suing that about that particular issue right now. I don't know how long that's going to take to get through the courts, but he's one of many. Joe Redner's also suing. So there's several lawsuits going on regarding our medical marijuana here. Let's see here. Let's see. And Antonio writes, I like what the senator is saying, but the main reason that this are being blocked is because of special interest. The jail, prison, business are not going to like that they cannot lock you up for silly offenses. The same with Big Pharma and the marijuana issue. Hard to make money of something you can't patent. At the end of the day, it's all about the Benjamins. Okay, thank you for that. Let's see here. Okay, okay, we've got several people on the line here. Oh, I did want to say one other thing. Bill Nelson, excuse me, Rick Scott, who may be running against Bill Nelson. You know, there was a story this morning, I think it's in CNN.com, about people are wondering, you know, Rick Scott is supposedly going to run for Senate against Bill Nelson, right? I mean, I think he's going to, and I think you probably do too. But yet he's still being, you know, pretty coy about it. He's got till May. He's got 5 full months. And, of course, we know the ability to Rick Scott, to fundraise, or not fundraise, he's got the money himself already. So he probably can delay announcing versus any other candidate for a big position like U.S. Senate. But another indication why Rick Scott probably is running is the fact that he came out this afternoon and slammed the Trump administration. How many times has that happened in the last year? This is a quote from Governor Scott. He says, following media reports that the Trump administration is expected to announce a plan for offshore oil drilling. Let's see. Okay, let's read this again. Based on media reports, it's likely that the Department of Interior will consider Florida as a potential state for offshore oil drilling, which is something I oppose in Florida. This is Governor Scott. I have already asked to immediately meet with Secretary Zinke to discuss the concerns I have with the plan and the crucial need to remove Florida from consideration. My top priority is to ensure that Florida's natural resources are protected, which is why I proposed $1.7 billion for the environment in this year's budget. Governor Rick Scott, that came out less than an hour ago. So let me read that last part again. My top priority is to ensure that Florida's natural resources are protected. So, yeah, I think he's running for U.S. Senate against Bill Nelson. Okay, let's go to the phones here. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mitch. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah.
I had a good time bringing in the New Year in California.
I did. Thanks for asking. Absolutely.
Yeah, I bought it in 1978. I was at a bar, a great bar there near the marina.
Uh-huh.
Bought it in 1979, and it was a great party. I loved it.
All right. But here in Tampa Bay.
Senator was on a question, but he's gone, so I'll go and just a couple of subjects. First of all, one of them is about marijuana, but the first one's about the abandoned book.
The Michael Wolff book about with Steve Bannon's quotes all over the place.
I never thought I'd say hooray for Bannon, but I love it. Let me say something. If they don't believe these people who say, you know, these Trumpsters who say, the establishment's backing Trump, and this is really nothing. Don't believe them. They are freaking out. This is a divorce. This is everything that we said about Trump. And then some of the startling revelations in the book, not only the personal stuff, people around calling him idiot, and he has this capacity for not even listening to people. He got reading the amendment, the Fourth Amendment. He's already fall, bored, doesn't know anything. But the big revelation I thought was Ivanka Trump saying that she was going to run for president. Oh my God! Can you imagine that? Donald, bad enough that this guy Ivanka, who Bannon says she was as dumb as a brick, and really and truly nobody's ever given a description of what she does in the White House. And then Jared, they were actually going to set up generations of Trumps. When somebody said on MSNBC that they have better chance of visiting each other in federal prison. Before they get generations of Trumps to run for president, I believe this is the beginning of the end. So
okay, now have you said that before, though, Danny?
I said it before. But now with the Mueller investigation and hopefully with the midterms, I believe that this is the year.
Well, the midterms is interesting because I saw was it Rick Tyler who worked for Ted Cruz, who I believe I saw this morning on MSNBC.
Yes.
He predicted, and I am very. I don't know if I agree with this at all. He predicted that if, in fact, there's a lot of people think that Democrats are going to do very well this November, but, long time away, we'll see. But if they do, the Republicans take big losses, then that they themselves will be supportive of impeaching the president. I don't know. It seems to me that you're not seeing that many Republicans still in Congress who are willing to criticize this president right now.
Not yet, but I believe the time is coming. I believe that the Democrats are ahead every time I see it in the polls.
Right.
As far as voting in, the people want the Democrats in there. So we're going to have to wait and see. And I just got to say, I've got to hope and hope and hope. Now, listen about the marijuana. Jeff Sessions, like you say now, Cory Gardner is really upset.
Right, the Colorado Senate Republican.
Upset at him. And, saying about the promise. And Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump, too. But Donald Trump is also against this, too. But Jeff Sessions is the guy who's trying to...
Well, I would like to know what President Trump feels about this, because I don't know if he has a libertarian stance on this, but the polls do show that people support this. I mean, every year it's becoming more and more popular for outright legalization. Not that
definitely,
the polls mean everything, but
like the guy said, look at Florida. They voted to have medical marijuana. You can't even, it's not even smokable. They got lawsuits. So we're a long way from being like recreational marijuana here in Florida. But and by the way, if it is illegal here and we ever get it recreational legal.
Uh-huh.
I believe that in bars, let's say I go to a karaoke bar, I've been going there for years, right? And they have cigarette smoke everywhere and alcohol. I believe that if it is legal, that you should be able to go ahead and smoke marijuana in the bar and have marijuana smoke there. As far as it's safer than cigarette smoke, that's been proven.
Secondhand smoke, right. Well, we'll see. I mean, I know in California, basically you're allowed, you got to keep it in your trunk if you're driving with it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, again, in California, and I think it's like this in Florida, right, you really can't smoke tobacco anywhere publicly these days. So
I go,
I'm sure there's some places that kind of curb the rules there.
Even when they had food there, they were still getting around the law there. So my point being, If it's all legal, then why would marijuana smoke not be legal and light up a marijuana cigar?
Well, I guess we'll get to that.
Have a drink at a bar. that seems perfectly normal to me. And if anybody would get upset about, I'm taking in marijuana smoke and I'm getting a buzz, well, what about the cigarette smoke you're taking in? You're not getting a buzz, but you're getting it's really, really bad for you, awful for you. I mean, it's for secondhand smoking and all that. So basically, the feds, they can go in for it. I don't think they will, Mitch. I really don't think they will. But, you know, they always have that power. They're still classified.
They do have the power. That's this whole idea behind this policy change today. Danny, we're going to move on. Thanks so much. Great to talk to you. Let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Hi, Daryl. You're on WMNF.
Hey, how you doing?
Good afternoon.
Let's see. The Freedom Caucus wants Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions to step down. I wonder, why would they want that? Let's see. If he steps down from that position, I see them trying to play various things. So that would probably make it easier for eventually to go after Donald Trump. Well, they don't really need Donald Trump anymore.
No, what do you mean they don't need Trump? I mean, Republican?
No, they got Mike Pence.
Oh,
and
okay.
If Sessions is out of there, how long is Doug Jones with the seat that he just
won? Yeah, he has to run again in 2020.
In 2020.
Yeah.
I could see Mr. Sessions running for that seat.
Yeah, that's a possibility. You know, there were some people wanting to run, you know, last month, actually. They wanted him out already. They're so mad at him for recusing himself in the Mueller investigation. That's their big issue with him.
Right. And what the vice president primarying Donald Trump because, his mind is such that he's not a quitter. But that's where I kind of see that going down. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Daryl. Appreciate the phone call. Again, it's you want to call in right now. We've got about 8 minutes to go here in the program. 813-239-9663, the first midpoint of 2018. We had State Senator Daryl Roussan talking about the upcoming legislative session, which begins next Tuesday, which is always a big deal, although who knows what's going to happen in the next 60 days at Tallahassee. The laws that they pass or don't pass many ways have a big effect on us, more than what goes on in Washington, D.C. And, of course, we heard from D.C. earlier from the Marijuana Policy Project regarding the Jeff Sessions reversal here of the Obama administration regarding allowing U.S. attorneys their discretion to go after marijuana, which is, of course, it's actually officially against the law, federal law, but not in the 29 states, including here in Florida, where it's allowed if you have a medical marijuana card. Okay, let's go to John in Sulphur Springs. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you? I just want to make a couple of points here. John Morgan's a good man. That case is supposed to come up within the next month and a half or so. And also I want to mention that the way it is now, there are poor people who do not have access to medical marijuana, even though it's accessible. And also that since it was legalized for medical purposes, back, they had a program on that said they had issued 6 cards in a year and a half. That's how slow they're trying to bring this down. And people are being poisoned by criminals on the street who use chemicals to mimic the effect, early effect of marijuana, long enough for the dealer to have the money in his pocket and be gone by the time they become nauseated and sick. I've been in bed for a week trying to get medicine. I qualify for medical marijuana, but the expense is $450 just to get in line, and then $150 every 2 months, plus the exorbitant prices that they charge for it.
Can you explain that to me? What the cost for you? If you have a card, though, right? Or
No, you cannot. You can't get the card until you submit it to the people that issue the cards. But before that,
right,
you have to have $300 for an evaluation by a doctor, and then $150 every 2 months to remain eligible in the program, plus the exorbitant prices for what they have, and you cannot even smoke it.
Right. I know you can't. Right. That you're informing me. I did not know that was the situation in terms of getting access. That's I don't understand that. That is pricing people out, patients who by law deserve to have this if they, you know, have a certain malady, right, that qualifies.
Well, listen, criminals are literally poisoning sick people who have to seek relief, try to get their medicine on the street. Back when President Reagan gave the okay to use paraquat to poison the fields in California, which in essence was giving the okay to poison citizens, and it seems to be in the political arena that that's the road they've chosen to just deny and deny and keep on causing anybody with having access to it an arm and a leg in order to get it. You're talking about a substance that grows wild on the side of the road. They may make it a hybrid and more effective, but it's basically the same weed that grows on the side of the road in many places. I don't understand it, and why they're poisoning people using chemicals, and a lot of times not even cannabis. They spray the chemicals on botanical materials and then say, oh, this is good this or good that, but in essence, they're literally poisoning people, and the government has to know about this. It's been going on and getting increasingly worse. They're literally killing people who are very sick that need it for medicinal purposes, and they seem to turn a blind eye, you know, to the situation. They can't legalize it and let it be regulated within reason for all people. They have to set it up where only the very affluent and rich can have access to it, and then they issue 6 cards in a year and a half.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that. I'm going to look into that, Jeff. John, excuse me. John, thank you so much for the phone call, and hang in there. All the best to you.
Hey, one more thing.
Yeah, quickly.
Circumventing the will of the people.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Okay, let's see. We've got about 4 minutes left to go here in the program. You want to give us a call, 813-239-9663. Let's see. We've got another comment here. Let's see. The prices are out of, yeah, there's another person who says the prices are out of control for Florida medical marijuana. I would suggest that last caller look into a company called Doc MJ. They only charge $20 a month, and you can do it over a video call. All right. Let's see here. Okay. Okay. Steve in Largo. Hi, Steve. You're on 88.5.
Hey, Mitch. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
No talk about Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. What? Good day.
Didn't get that at all. If you want to give us a call. If not, hey, by the way, there's a story here. Daily Beast says Justice Department officials are taking a fresh look at Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server while she served as Secretary of State. I'm not kidding, folks. Let's see here. An ally of Jeff Sessions, who's familiar with the thinking of the Justice Department's Washington headquarters, described it as an effort to gather new details on how Clinton and her aides handled classified material. This is something I'm sure you've been seeing the president's been tweeting about during the holidays. Officials' question include how much classified information was sent over Clinton's server, who put that information into an unclassified environment, and how and which investigators knew about these matters and when. Again, I'm reading from the Daily Beast story. The Sessions ally also said officials have questions about immunity agreements that Clinton aides may have made. So this is maybe how Jeff Sessions gets back in the good graces of the Freedom Caucus. By the way, I heard, you know, he's been really getting a lot of pub on the conservative media outlets doing going crazy on this is Matt Gaetz, the freshman congressman from the Panhandle area, former state legislator. He is really getting a lot of airtime these days talking about going after. I don't know if he's actually calling for Sessions to step down, but that is really becoming a big thing amongst the conservatives in Congress right now, Republicans. And again, I read that earlier. I thought this Freedom Caucus thing was about the Sessions announcement this morning. No, it's about basically they're mad at him again for recusing himself, which, of course, President Trump is apparently mad. If you remember, right, as he's done with Rex Tillerson and a few other members of the cabinet, kind of floating it out there that he might get rid of him. Doesn't do it, but floats that out there. Okay, so we've got, I think we've got time here for one more call here. If we can take that in here. Let's see. I don't know who this is. I'm just going to take this call. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Hi, is the caller there?
Yeah, my name is Greg. I'm from Port Charlotte.
Yes, Greg.
Hey, I'm listening to the slamming of Donald Trump and this Russian collusion. You would think that after, you know, being investigated, that something would have turned up. If you really want to know if any collusion took place, maybe look into the Clintons. You know, Russia, if they were going to try and sway the election, don't you think they would want somebody that would help out Russia and sell them more uranium like Hillary Clinton did?
Oh, the uranium one story, yes. Let's bring that back up. Anyway, I don't think we have a whole lot of time here. In fact, we don't. We got to move out here. But if you want to call back next week, we can talk more about that, because what I've seen about that, State Department was one of, what, 10 departments that had to sign off on that. So I don't understand the singling out of Hillary Clinton regarding uranium one. But we can talk about that next week, though. Definitely. Please give us a call back. That's going to be it for us. great to be back here in 2018 at WMNF. So glad that you were listening to us. We'll be back next week. Want to thank Jeff Haynes for taking our phone calls here, or being our engineer here. Frank Knox has been taking the phone calls. Stay tuned next for executive sessions and great programming throughout the weekend coming up here on MNF. I'm Mitch Perry, host every Thursday here. I'll see you here, same time, same place. You're listening to WMNF Tampa.